Murder,
he thought, and pushed the notion at the boy. And to his surprise, to his utter delight, it only took that nudge, that tiny whiff, and murder blossomed. Nick dreamed, and for once the dream was peaceful. He played in the lady's garden, chasing the wild fairies while the lady sat upon a throne and watched. A warm breeze blew lightly across a pond. It smelled of honeysuckle and spring water. The fairies giggled and flew up into a tree. Nick flew after them and perched alongside them. It was then that he realized that he'd sprouted wings, that he wasn't any larger than a bird, and, odder than that, he was fine with this. What could be better than being a fairy in the lady's garden? The lady smiled at him, like one of her children. Nick was happy, content, and wished for nothing more. Nick heard someone call his name. The voice was familiar, but he couldn't place it at first. It was so far away. It was that other woman, he realized, the one he'd left behind. Nick felt a tickle in the back of his mind, something he needed to do for her, but he couldn't be bothered to think about her, not now. He was just too busy playing. A shadow fell across the grounds. A round wood door stood in the garden. Nick heard scratching coming from behind it. Something wanted in badly. Nick looked to the lady. She looked frightened. A shrill cry cut across the garden, something in great pain. It rang in his head, louder and louder. Nick awoke. For the first time since he'd arrived, he wasn't covered in sweat and his stomach didn't burn. Yet he still felt uneasy. He glanced at the round door. He couldn't shake the feeling that something sinister was on the other side, waiting to be let in. There was no sign that Peter and the devils had come back yet. He wondered how late it was. Cricket and Danny were asleep in their cages, the long day looking to have caught up with them. They'd moved Sikiyu's cage over near the fireplace. He watched her twist fitfully in her sleep. Her face appeared troubled, as though she were having a bad dream. Nick glanced to Leroy's cage. It was empty. Nick caught a faint sound, a squeal. It came again, a strained laugh, or maybe a cry, hard to tell. Again, a faint sound, but this time Nick recognized it as a scream, something in pain. It came from the privy. What the hell? He thought, and crawled from his cage. It was eerie with all the devils gone. He listened, could hear the trolls' snores coming from the loft above. Then the squeal, a long squeal. It sent a chill up his spine, and he wondered how such a small sound could be so terrible. Nick crossed the floor to the privy. The door was slightly ajar, and a thin, flickering light escaped through the crack. Nick laid his hand on the door and started to push it inward, when it flew open and he was face to face with Leroy. But it was as though Leroy didn't even see him. The boy's eyes were looking past him toward the round door. He's here, Leroy whispered, and shoved past Nick. Before Nick could say or do anything, another painful squeal came from the privy. He glanced in, and his eyes went wide. There on the stone next to the toilet pit was a single crumbled pixie wing, a strand of bloody blue flesh dangling from the end. The sharp squeal again, like a mouse in the teeth of a cat. It came from the toilet pit. Nick didn't want to look, but he inched forward anyway and peered down the shaft. He saw two blue pixies tangled in the stringy black webbing, one a boy, the other a girl with a mane of wispy white hair. The girl appeared unharmed, but the boy looked dead, his body broken as though he'd been crushed, two bloody gashes on his back where his wings had been torn away. The girl let loose a chilling scream, and the blue glow of her skin pulsated, lighting up the shaft. And Nick saw them, far down the pit among the shit and stink, hundreds of black spiders, the blue radiance glittering off their tiny, cold eyes. He could hear their clatter as they scrambled up the web. The girl screamed again and fought to free herself. The spiders reached the boy, swarmed over him, and the boy let out a shrill wail. "Oh, God!" Nick cried upon realizing the boy still lived. "Oh, good God!" The spiders tore the boy from the web, pulled him down into the pit, and he disappeared beneath their black, oily bodies. The spiders came for the girl. "Get her out," Nick told himself. "Now, hurry!"
"No,"
he said harshly. "She's too far down. There's no way. No way." Yet he found himself down on one knee, his hand hovering above the pit. "No, no," he spat through clenched teeth. Then the spiders were on her. She screamed, and Nick plunged his entire arm into the pit, tearing down through the gummy webbing. He grabbed the pixie, and in doing so also grabbed a handful of spiders. He could feel their hard, hairy legs and soft, soggy bodies as they writhed in his grasp, felt their hot secretions spurt into his hand as he tugged them from the web. A jab of pain, like a wasp sting, hit his palm, then another, and another. He cried out, but didn't let go of the girl. He sat up quick, yanking his arm and the pixie from the pit. Long, syrupy strings of web stretched and snapped as he pulled away. The spiders clung to his hand like leeches, their flat, tick-like bodies creased and wrinkled, glistening with sticky, milky goo. He dropped the girl to the stones and frantically slapped and clawed the spiders from his arm, leaping to his feet, trying to stomp them as they skittered about like crabs, darting back into the pit. Angry red welts dotted his hand and wrist. He wiped at his arm, trying to peel away the smelly webbing. He noticed the pixie. She, too, was covered in filth and webbing. Her wings trembled and her eyes were full of terror, but she looked like she might be okay. Nick heard Leroy's laugh. Leroy walked into the flickering lantern light, stopped, and peered in. Nick saw that Leroy held a sword, then realized it was Malduriel. Leroy smiled a strange, vacant smile, and walked on. "What the fuck?" Nick said under his breath and rushed from the privy. It took a second for Nick's eyes to adjust to the darkness. Where did he go? Nick saw Leroy in front of the fireplace. He stood over Sikiyu's cage. And then, like it was nothing to him, like he was simply poking a bundle of hay, Leroy brought the sword up and shoved it down through the cage into Sikiyu's neck. Sikiyu's eyes flashed open. A terrible gurgle escaped her throat. "No!" Nick screamed and charged, ran as hard as he could, but felt as though moving through syrup as Leroy tugged the blade free and brought it down again and again and again. Blood gushed from Sikiyu's neck as she flailed against the cage, struggled to escape, but she was trapped, like an animal for slaughter. The sharp blade cut into her arms, her hands, her chest, then into her face. Nick hit him, slammed into Leroy at a full run, knocking the bigger boy against the mantle. Malduriel flew from Leroy's hand, clattered across the stone. Nick snatched the sword up and came for Leroy. Leroy looked dazed, confused, then caught sight of Nick, saw the bloody sword in Nick's hand, and his eyes went wide. "Stay away from me!" he shrieked.
What's going on?
Came a deep, booming voice, and Nick was confronted by a blinding flame. Nick stopped, blinked, then saw Tangnost standing before him with a torch in one hand and an axe in the other. Behind the troll stood Cricket and Danny, their faces ashen and horrified. The torchlight revealed more than Nick ever wanted to see. Blood bubbled from the slash in Sikiyu's throat as she tried to speak. A wet, sucking sound came from the wounds in her chest. She met Nick's eyes and seemed to be begging him to help her. A clot of blood spat from her lips, and she was still, her unblinking eyes frozen on his. Leroy raised a shaking hand and pointed an accusing finger at Nick.
He killed her. I saw it all. He's crazy. I tried to warn you. He's fucking crazy.
Nick glanced at the sword in his hand. His sword. At the blood smeared across its blade and dripping onto the stones. Splat, 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 like a telltale heart.
Nick?
Cricket called weakly. Nick didn't feel his fingernails cut into his palm as he clenched his hand into a fist, didn't hear the inhuman growl that escaped his own throat, or even realize his lips were peeled back into a snarl. He set his eyes on Leroy, took a step forward, then another. His head hung low, like that of a mad dog.
Murderer,
he said, low and harsh.
Murderer!
The ragged words tearing loose from deep in his throat.
Murderer!
He screamed, his face full of rage.
Get back!
The troll cried, pushing Cricket and Danny away.
He's turned! The darkness has him!
Leroy scrambled behind the troll and ran for the door. Nick leaped after him, so intent on catching him he didn't see the troll bring the axe around until the last second. Nick ducked, sliding beneath the blow. The axe hit the mantle, smashing the edge to bits.
Don't let him open the door!
Nick screamed, his face a knot of frustration. Couldn't they see that Leroy was heading toward the door? That he was going to let whatever was out there in? The troll swung again, knocking the sword from Nick's hand and driving Nick into the wall. Leroy was at the door, sliding the slat free. Nick faked left and jumped right, causing the troll to stumble into one of the benches. Nick darted past in time to see Leroy shove the door open and flee into the night. Nick stopped, sure some indescribable horror was about to appear in the doorway. But the only horror coming for him was the troll with the axe. Nick caught sight of Cricket and Danny, caught their condemning looks.
No!
Nick shouted, shaking his head.
It wasn't me!
The troll didn't even pause, just came on at a full charge.
It wasn't me!
Nick shouted again, then ran, the troll's heavy footsteps chasing him out the door and into the swirling night fog. When Nick finally dared to stop, he wished he hadn't. While running, he'd been too occupied avoiding the roots and thorns, ledges and pits, to worry about anything else. But now, as he leaned heavily against the trunk of a fallen tree, as the sound of his own breathing slowed down, he began to hear the night, to hear the things in the night. The woods themselves creaked and moaned, and Nick thought of the way the trees in Whisperwood had talked to each other, and wondered if the trees around him now were speaking, if they were telling the things with claws and fangs and stingers that he was here, wondered if they were telling that other thing, that dark thing, that he was alone. Nick strained to see within the deeper shadows. He could feel that other out there, still probing for him in the night. Nick reached for his sword and realized he'd left it behind, but he did have his knife. He pulled it out. It felt small and insubstantial in his hand. "I can't stay out here," he thought. "I have to go back. I can clear this up, right?" "No," a deeper voice warned. "No, you can't." He knew what he'd seen on the troll's face, in Cricket's and Danny's eyes. The troll had said he'd turned. Turned into what? A flesh eater, he guessed. He'd seen the way they'd been watching him. It wasn't hard to put together. Now they believed he'd murdered Sakiyu. "Peter will kill me on sight." He started forward, then stopped. "Where am I going?" "Home," he whispered. "I've got to get home. Back to my mom. One way or another." He shook his head. "I can't even find my way out of these goddamn woods. How am I supposed to make it all the way home?" "I'm screwed," he thought. "Completely screwed." He heard something in the distance, back the way he'd come. Sounded like footsteps. Were they after him already? Peter and the devils? He wasn't going to wait around to find out. He pushed down the slope and realized he'd no idea which direction he was heading, that he could be heading back to Deviltree for all he knew. Then it was there, just ahead, in a small clearing illuminated by the luminescent ground fog. A tall figure draped in a long woolly cape. It wore a helmet with wide, curving antlers. It held someone. Leroy. It appeared to be talking to the boy. The horned creature turned its head toward Nick. Its eyes glowed from deep within the visor. The eyes, those burning eyes, fixed on Nick. And when they did, a fear so crippling gripped him that he fell to his knees. "Run, little rabbit. Run." Nick found he could move again. Scrambling on his hands and knees, he clawed his way up the slope, stumbled to his feet, and ran. Peter led the devils homeward to Deviltree. As he jogged through the night, he tried to keep his mind focused on tomorrow, away from thoughts of Abraham. The witch had helped them find him. The boy's decapitated body hung from a tree out in the burning field, naked, mutilated. The witch had almost been kindly to Peter in his grief. It was her land, her swamp that the flesh eaters had so boldly trespassed. She was ready to fight, anxious for blood. So it was all set. "Tomorrow," Peter thought. "Tomorrow we end it." They crested the trail and Peter saw Deviltree below. He stopped. The door to the fort stood open. Tagnost's tall figure silhouetted in its frame, an axe in his hand. "What now?" Peter wondered and sprinted down. As he neared, he caught sight of the troll's anguished features and slowed to a walk. Tagnost tried to speak, but seemed capable of only shaking his head. Yet his eyes told Peter all he needed to know. Peter tried to shove past. The old troll grabbed him.
"Peter," Tagnost called. "Peter, wait. You should."
Peter tore loose and pushed into the chamber. Saw the blankets, the blood on the floor, on the walls. He saw Sakiyu's copper-colored hand curling out from beneath the blankets and fell to his knees. He reached for her hand, hesitated, afraid to touch her, then slowly clasped her hand in his. It was cold.
"Sakiyu,"
Peter whispered, and started to pull the blanket back from her face. Cricket put her hand on the blanket.
"No,"
she said sternly.
"Peter," Tagnost said, his voice tender. "It was the darkness. It took Nick. I'm sorry. It just happened. So fast.
The darkness?
Peter asked, almost choking on the words.
No, that's not possible.
The troll looked pained.
I know this is hard, but I was there. I saw it with my own eyes. We all did. Nick's out of his mind, Peter. He attacked Leroy. I've never seen such rage.
But how?
Peter asked, his voice cracking.
How? You were there? The lady, she healed him. She drove it from him. You saw it. Tell me you saw it.
The lady. Well, she's so weak. Maybe it didn't hold. Maybe.
Tagnost looked baffled.
Peter, I don't know. I wish I had an answer.
No,
Peter said, shaking his head.
No, it's not the darkness. I won't believe it.
Leroy came stumbling through the entrance, his back to them, staring at something out in the woods. His back bumped into the door and he quickly shoved it closed, fumbling to slide the heavy slat into place.
Where is he?
Tagnost asked. Leroy jumped. The slat slid from his hands, landing on the stones with a solid thud. He spun around and glanced wildly about the room. His eyes fell on Sikiyu, went to Peter, and became wide, afraid. He backed into the door.
Nick killed her, he said.
Yes, the troll said. Where did he go?
He's in the woods, Leroy said quickly. I tried to stop him, but he has a sword. His sword, and I don't... didn't...
Leroy's eyes kept shifting back to Sikiyu.
If I had a weapon, I would have stopped him. I tried to stop him.
Where in the woods? Tagnost pressed. Which direction was he going?
Toward Goggy Creek.
Peter, Tagnost said. We have to catch him now. Right now.
Peter didn't answer.
Peter, don't you understand? We can't let him fall into the hands of the flesh eaters. He knows where Deviltry is. Knows our numbers, our plans. They'll get him to talk. Everything's at stake. Peter, he knows where the haven lies.
Peter's eyes fixed on Sikiyu's long black hair spilling out from beneath the blanket. He touched it, ran his fingers through it.
Sikiyu, how?
Redbone brought Peter a spear. The devils were lined up behind him. They looked anxious. We're ready, Redbone said. Peter?
Just go,
Tagnost said to the group and herded them toward the door.
Hurry, before it's too late. Take everyone. You'll need every pair of eyes. Danny, Cricket, you too.
He snatched spears off the wall and pushed them into their hands.
Take no chances. Remember, this isn't Nick. This isn't your friend. Nick's gone from us. What's left is a monster.
He raised his voice.
Kill him on sight. Whatever you do, don't let him fall into the hands of the flesh eaters.
Peter heard all this as though from somewhere far away. The troll sat down next to Peter. Peter continued to stroke Sikiyu's hair as his thoughts stumbled over one another.
How could I have let this happen?
He pressed his hand to his temple.
Because I'd been so sure. Because I saw the lady heal him, that's how. There's something else going on here. It has to be something else.
He looked at Malduriel, at the blood, Sikiyu's blood, still wet on the fine elven blade. Peter's brow tightened.
Hadn't Leroy said Nick had a sword in the woods? Yes, he'd made a point of saying it. Tagnost?
Yes.
You saw Nick kill Sikiyu?
Yes. Well, no,
I didn't actually see him do it, but I... Did any of the kids, did any of them see it?
Yes, Leroy did.
Where's Leroy?
He went with the others.
Peter thought of the odd way Leroy had acted. Nothing he could put his finger on, but definitely not right.
I need to talk to Nick, Peter said,
and before the troll could protest, Peter snatched up the spear and ran out the door.
They come, Ulfgar thought.
23, maybe 24 little boys and girls, all spread out, hunting the rabbit. He opened his eyes. He could see the faintest glow pushing through the treetops as dawn's first light touched the low clouds. He closed his eyes again, because he could see so much more with them shut. It seemed the longer he wore the helmet, the further he could see, as though his mind and the helmet were melding, fusing, becoming one. Just ahead, the rabbit had stopped again. Ulfgar could sense the boy's disorientation, his fear. Beyond the rabbit, they waited at the forest's edge, the flesh eaters. So many Ulfgar couldn't count them all, but he could sense their hate, their need for murder. He'd followed the rabbit all night, kept it on course. When the rabbit slowed down or strayed, he merely made his presence known, and the little rabbit got moving again. Avalok had been kind, too kind, had made it all too easy. The rabbit would lead the child thief and his brats right to the flesh eaters, right into their trap.
And then... Oh, and then,
Ulfgar laughed, couldn't help himself. He felt like he would never stop laughing. A twig snapped, and Nick's eyes flew open. Faint light pushed through the tangled limbs above him. How long had he been asleep? He glanced anxiously about. Was it here? How could he have allowed himself to fall asleep with that horrible creature hunting him? Every time he'd thought he'd lost it, every time he'd stopped to catch his breath, it had appeared, its red eyes glowering at him, clawing their way into his head. Nick tried to get his bearings, but the fog was thick. He could barely see 20 paces in any direction. Another snap, somewhere behind him. Nick slid his hand around the hilt of his knife, wishing he'd held on tighter to his sword. He stood and crept off, but the ground was soggy and the sticky mud pulled beneath his feet. Suddenly, footsteps came rapidly toward him. He saw Dirk staring at him across a thicket of thorns, the boy's eyes as wide and frightened as his own. Nick raised his hands.
Dirk, I didn't do it. You got to believe.
Dirk leaped forward and threw his spear. Nick managed to duck the missile. The blade whisked past his head and stuck into a tree.
Here! He's here!
Dirk shouted, yanking out his sword and charging through the thorns for Nick. Nick ran, dashed into the bushes, found a small trail and sprinted down it as fast as he could go. Shouts came from all around him, and he spied several figures in the fog, running parallel to him through the trees. Nick broke into a large clearing of gray, knee-high grass, and another group of devils shot out into the clearing ahead of him. Nick cut away and darted toward a thin line of trees. He could see the burning fields through their branches, and it occurred to him if he could make it out there, then maybe, maybe the devils wouldn't follow. A spear whisked past him, so close he actually felt its wake. The devils howled like beasts, and Nick knew how a deer must feel when chased by wolves. A shrill cry escaped his own throat, eyes wide, heart pounding, as his legs whipped through the tall grass. Nick closed in on the line of trees, could smell the soggy, burned wood beyond. A spear slapped off his thigh, the shaft tangled in his legs. Nick went sprawling into the grass. Peter heard shouts in the distance. Sounds were tricky in the thick fog. He stopped and cocked his head from side to side as he tried to locate their direction. He'd found what he thought were Nick's tracks just before dawn and followed them. But the tracks had run together with those of the devils, and since then he'd been racing along, hoping to catch Nick before the devils did. He'd also found other tracks, large, deep imprints. It would take someone of substantial weight to make such tracks.
A lone flesh eater?
That didn't seem likely. There was only one other possibility, and he didn't want to think of it. Whoever it was, they were tracking the boy. More shouts.
They're near the burning fields, Peter thought.
He heard yelling, the calls echoing up and down the valley in the early morning quiet. Peter was horrified.
Don't they know where they are?
Avalok, be merciful, Peter pleaded, and took off at a hard run.
Had not enough gone wrong?
Nick sat up. They had him, fanning out, circling him.
Is this how I'm going to die?
He wondered. Not killed by monsters, not by some drug dealer, but at the hands of a bunch of kids. Kids that had just yesterday called him their brother. Not even his fear of death was so terrible as the looks he saw on their faces. The feverish glee that ran beneath the bloodlust. A murderous joy only experienced by lynching mobs.
I didn't do it!
Nick cried. But no one was listening. They all had murder, his murder, in their eyes. Dirk leaped for him, his sword pulled back, his eyes on Nick's neck, his face no different than that of a boy about to score a touchdown. A spear, a thick, heavy spear, hit Dirk in the middle of his chest, driving deep into his ribs, knocking him off his feet. A loud cry filled the air. Flesh eaters, a long ragged line of them, burst from the trees. Men in armor and heavy boots came screaming into the grassy glade, brandishing swords, spears, and pikeaxes. Nick made for his feet, felt thick, powerful fingers grab his arm, yank him into the air, then slam him to the ground. All the breath left Nick's body. A flesh eater shoved his face into Nick's. The man's lips peeled back into a mockery of a grin, exposing white gums and black teeth. His eyes, little more than slits of red, glared at Nick.
Gonna be all right, lad. Aye, we're here to save you.
Nick tried to break away, then felt a jagged blade against his neck.
There now, the man chortled. You should stay put if you be wanting to keep your ears attached to the sides of your head.
Nick saw a spear hit Redbone. It went through the boy's side, the point protruding out of his back. Redbone grasped the spear in both hands, screamed through clenched teeth, and collapsed to his knees. The devils were spread out across the glade. They stopped in their tracks, their faces, which only seconds before were those of bloodthirsty predators, were now wild with shock and terror.
Now!
Commanded a tall man wearing a wide-brimmed hat, and more heavily armed men, at least 30 or 40 of them, came rushing into the glade down off the east slope.
Run!
Screamed Redbone.
Get out of here!
The devils broke and ran, scrambling in all directions. The men gave chase. Spears flew from both sides, men and devils alike falling to the ground. Nick saw the big blonde bear take 2 spears in the back. Bear didn't fall, just kept stumbling away, weaving like a drunk, wheezing and coughing up blood until finally a man hit him in the back of the skull with an axe. Another kid, a black boy from Brooklyn whose name Nick couldn't remember, was hit in the leg, a spear going all the way through his thigh. The boy fell to the ground and began dragging himself forward, clawing at the soft earth. 5 men set to him with axe and sword. Another group of flesh-eaters came running into the clearing from the west side. They slung nets weighted with rocks at the devils, bringing many down in a tangle, then stabbing them to death as they fought to free themselves. Nick caught sight of Danny and Cricket. They stood at the farthest end of the glade, frozen in place, their eyes wide with horror.
"Run! What are you waiting for?"
A flesh-eater gave a shout, pointed at the pair, and over a dozen men started toward them. Danny turned and ran back into the trees, followed a second later by Cricket. Peter raced down the path. The din of battle, the screams of pain echoed eerily up the foggy valley.
"Those are devils dying!"
his mind screamed at him. Peter leaped recklessly across a wide rushing creek, careened down a steep path, heedless to the danger as he half fell and half slid down the loose stones to its bottom. He landed in a roll and was up again, running onward, determined to get to the fight before all was lost. Peter skidded around a clump of thick oaks, and there, down the ledge below him, were Cricket, Danny, and a devil by the name of Trick. They were surrounded by a wide circle of flesh-eaters. The flesh-eaters moved in, tightening the ring. Trick was doing his best to hold them off, yelling and slashing the air with his spear. Cricket and Danny both clutched their spears, all but paralyzed with fear. 4 flesh-eaters rushed in at once, knocking Trick's spear aside and running him through. Pain twisted the boy's face and blood spurted from his mouth as he slid to the ground. Peter snarled, leaped forward, and launched his spear. The weapon flew true, finding its mark in the breastplate of the forwardmost man, piercing the thin metal and knocking the man to the ground. Peter yanked both of his swords from their scabbards and ran all out, launching himself off the ledge and into the air from almost 20 feet above the fight. He howled and the men looked up, their eyes going wide with surprise as a screaming demon came hurtling onto them. Peter crashed into them feet first, the men collapsing like bowling pins. Peter bounded up off the first man, leaving him headless. He landed on the second man and thrust his sword into his face before the man could even push his helmet from his eyes. Then he was away, cutting one man's arm off at the elbow with one sword while thrusting the other sword into the throat of another. He leaped and spun, his twin blades weaving a dance of death and dismemberment, leaving severed arms, legs, and necks in their wake. When there was no more flesh to cut in front of him, Peter whirled, eyes blazing, not even bothering to wipe away the splash of black blood that ran across his face. 6 men lay dead or dying at his feet, their moans music to his ears. Danny let out a cry as the flesh-eaters grabbed him and closed ranks. Peter spotted Cricket halfway up the embankment. She stopped and looked back at him.
"Get out of here!"
Peter cried. Cricket hesitated, then scrambled to the top of the ledge and disappeared. Peter glared at the 8 remaining men, grinning as black blood dripped from his blades. The men watched him as though he was possessed, but these were seasoned fighters, not new recruits, and they spread out into a defensive formation. One man drifted too far, and Peter was on him in a heartbeat. There came a quick clang of steel as Peter knocked aside the spear point, rolled, and cut the man down at the ankle. The man collapsed, screaming and clutching his spurting stump. Peter was up and away before the next man in line could come near. Peter circled, and they followed him with their swords and spears. Shouts came from down the trail. More men were coming, a lot more men. Now it was the flesh-eaters that grinned. Peter knew he had to end this fast. He took a step forward, and when he did, the man holding Danny thrust his sword under the boy's throat.
You move again and the boy dies.
Danny whimpered as blood trickled from the edge of the sword at his neck.
I'll cut him. Cut him wide open, I will.
But there was more going on here than the men realized. Peter meant to save Danny if he could, but the darker truth was that Peter couldn't let the men take Danny. Not alive. Not under any circumstances. Danny knew where the lady was.
Danny, say your prayers,
Peter said, his voice like cold steel. The men exchanged a nervous glance. Peter came at them, running all out. The men tightened their ranks and leveled their spears, but this was what Peter had wanted. At the last second, he faked left, drawing their weapons to bear, then leaped right, launching himself from a large root, bounding up and cartwheeling over the men. He struck out with both swords, the blades scissoring into the face of the man holding Danny, cutting the entire front of the man's face off, exposing his eye sockets, nasal cavities, and an open hole where his mouth had been. There came a horrible gargling cry. The man's tongue flapped like a windsock. He fell away from Danny, clutching what was left of his face. Peter landed behind them. The men all tried to spin at once, but in different directions, crashing into one another and getting tangled in each other's weapons. Peter shoved his swords into the backs of the men on either side of Danny and snatched the boy free, hauling him away, pushing him up the trail.
Run! He screamed. Run for the lady's sake!
Danny took off with Peter right behind him and made it about 4 paces, then tripped, taking Peter down with him. Peter got 1 foot back under him when something hit him on the back of the skull. Peter was still lucid enough to feel his face slap the hard earth, to feel the air go out of him, to see the men with their wicked grins and deadly spears circle him. Then he saw something else. There, far up on the hill, looking down, stood a tall figure in a woolly cape. A helmet with great antlers sat on its head. Peter smiled. The Horned One had come to guide him to the other world. Part 4. The Captain. Chapter 20. Samuel Carver. Redbone slipped again, jerking the rope against Nick's neck. Nick winced as the prickly cords bit into his flesh. He fought to keep his footing and could only watch helplessly as Redbone struggled to regain his feet. There was a terrible gash in Redbone's side. Blood oozed out and ran all the way down his leg. And even though Redbone had been trying to kill him only an hour before, Nick still hated to see him suffer like this. Just ahead of Redbone, Danny was blubbering and wouldn't shut up. In front of Danny was Leroy. Nick wished Leroy was the one with the wound in his side. He'd have no problem watching Leroy choke. Peter was in the lead, plodding silently forward. Nick had no idea what was going to happen to them, but whatever it was, it wouldn't be good. The men strung out in a long procession both in front and behind the boys, their dark, leathery flesh glistening beneath a coat of oily sweat. Directly ahead trudged a group of pikemen with the heads of the dead devils sitting atop their pikes. Dirk's lifeless eyes stared at Nick as his tongue lolled back and forth to the rhythm of the march. Now that they were out in the open landscape and well away from the forests, the men had dropped their guard, staring at the trail with empty, soulless eyes, and dragging their spears as they tromped down the long, gray road. Nick did his best to avoid looking at them, at the thick veins running beneath their skin like worms, the bumps, scales, and horns. Apparently, the magic had twisted each man differently, and Nick found himself confronted with an endless variety of tortured bodies and the faces of men weary to their very souls. The air was warm and humid, especially compared to the forests. Sweat rolled down Nick's face and into his wounds, stinging the raw flesh where the ropes cut into his neck and wrists. Nick's tongue felt swollen. He couldn't remember ever being so thirsty. Down here in the flatlands, the earth was dried out. They kicked up a cloud of dust as they marched along, and soon were covered in the clay-like powder. Nick tried to spit to clear his mouth of the grime, but his mouth was too dry. Their guard, a short one-armed man with a sour face and a festering of warts along his brow, whacked Peter on the shin with the butt of his spear. Peter stumbled, but somehow managed to keep from falling.
"Stop dragging your feet, you ugly canny. Move it."
The man caught Nick looking at him and shoved his face into Nick's. His breath smelled like rotten meat.
"He be a demon, you know. That one."
He whacked Peter with the blunt end of his spear.
"Tell me you can see it."
Nick didn't answer.
"Little fool," the guard spat. "How can you be so blind? Do you not see his pointy ears? He be Lucifer's own son, that one."
Nick turned away from the man.
"You see this?"
The guard pressed his scarred stump right into Nick's cheek.
"It were him that done this."
The guard took the blunt end of his spear and whacked Peter in the ribs. Peter let out a grunt, and the guard laughed, then whacked Peter again.
"Beasley, enough,"
came a rough, weary voice. The voice came from the tall man with a thin mustache and goatee, wearing a wide-brimmed hat, what Nick thought of as a pirate's hat.
"Aye, Captain,"
the one-armed man sneered, then gave Peter a shove for good measure. Captain Samuel Carver pulled at his goatee and scanned the line of captives. They'd captured 5 boys alive and had the heads of close to a dozen more to decorate the fort walls with. Though they looked like children, the captain knew better and had made doubly sure their hands were tightly bound and their necks strapped to the pole before beginning the long march back to the fort. The captain studied the red-headed boy in the lead, a clot of blood drying on his scalp. The captain resented that this demon child should have red blood. It wasn't right, not when his own pure English blood had turned black. Of course, what was right anymore?
"It's him. The pointy ears leave no doubt."
This had to be the one they called Peter, the leader of this pack of heathens. How many times had this demon taunted them? Now, they not only had him, they had him alive. The captain still couldn't believe it, would never have guessed it could be so easy. The demons had come early, right on the heels of yesterday's success. The captain had guessed that one right, and marshaled every able-bodied man in preparation, intending to catch the demons by surprise. His plan was to hide his main body among the trees and draw Peter into an ambush with a smaller force, but no such plan had been needed. The demon children came straight to them, as though God had handed them over. The captain almost felt disappointed, cheated. He'd come to expect more from this devilish creature. He moved up alongside Peter.
"Tell me something, boy," the captain asked in a deep, rough voice. "Did you give up? Is that it? Just tired of the game? Tell me, son, so I can put my mind to rest."
The red-headed boy met his eyes and held them. Even beaten and tied, the creature managed a sneer. The captain shook his head.
"Well,
It's over now, at least for you.
One of the boys stumbled. The kid had a wild mop of hair with a red bone tied into it, a long scar that ran across his eye, and a nasty-looking wound in his side. The rope strangled him as he struggled to regain his feet. The captain knew he had a right to hate them all, but found it hard to feel anything other than pity. Beneath the scars, the paint, the savage sneers, they were just children, or at least had been once. He knew a bit about Peter, how he stole these poor lads from the outside, bewitched them to do his bidding, turned them into savages. But no matter how savage they appeared, they all cried for their mothers once the Reverend started in on them. Three of them looked to be fresh recruits. They had no scars, none of the tattoos and other wicked markings. The captain dared to hold out a little hope. With these, there might be a chance. Maybe he'd be able to win them over, get them to talk, to help. He'd rescued children before, and they'd all died badly, with their secrets undivulged. All except Billy. Billy had been fresh like these boys. A little kindness and putting the fear of the Reverend in him, and the boy had come around. It had been from Billy that he'd learned about Peter, about the lady and the legend of her precious apple tree. But Billy hadn't known where the lady and her tree were hidden. It pained the captain to think of Billy. He had been a sweet-natured child. But then the change took Billy, and it had driven him mad. The captain had had to cut the boy down, and it still grieved his heart. The wounded boy continued to struggle for his feet, continued to strangle. The captain sighed and pulled the boy back up. The boy gasped for air, all but snarling as he glared at the captain. The captain shook his head and wondered why he even bothered, why they'd even brought this one along. There'd be no hope for the likes of him. It would be an act of mercy to kill him now and spare him the suffering to come. A brisk wind chased a devil duster through a field of beaten-down corn stalks. Just beyond the withered crop, the fort rose from the sooty earth. The tall, spiked timbers of the outer wall were the same dull gray as the land and leaned against each other as though in need of support. The procession clomped across the dilapidated log bridge spanning a small brook. The sound of gurgling water tortured Nick. He tried to wet his lips, but his tongue was still too dry. Crosses lined either side of the road, made from bleached wood and bones, some jutting out of the ground at odd angles, others had fallen over, lying broken and half buried in the parched dirt. Graves, Nick realized. Hundreds of them, all the way to the fort. Nick heard a moan escape Peter. At first he thought the guard had hit him again, but then he saw and gasped. Abraham's head sat atop the wall of the fort. Nick looked away, but not before seeing Abraham's dead eyes, not before seeing the other skulls, dozens of them lining the post. How many? He thought. How many boys have died for this island? A shout came from a tower near the gate, and the gate swung outward. They were led into the compound, and Nick got his first look at the village. The cabins were little more than huts, composed of straw roofs and crumbling sod and log walls. There were a few gardens here and there, sparsely populated with withered vegetables. He saw dried fish hanging from a line, then looked again. There, hanging among the fish, were several pixies, gutted and splayed. Everywhere Nick looked, crosses. Big, small, made of twigs, made of thorns, made of bones, painted white, red, or black. some with hair, lace, shells, skulls tied or nailed to them. They stuck up from the ground, hung along the roofs, along the walls, and from every doorway. Most of the men were dismissed and drifted away. A handful of guards remained and steered them toward the center of the compound. A woman peered out at Nick from within a dusky doorway. When their eyes met, she raised her crucifix, crossed herself, and withdrew into the shadows. She waited until they'd passed, then followed. Soon there were several women following them, creeping along but keeping their distance. These shriveled, black-skinned women all looked the same to Nick, wearing faded, tattered, long-sleeved, ankle-length dresses, their stringy hair stuffed under bonnets, their red eyes wide and ominous. The captain brought them to a halt in front of a building with a cross set atop a leaning steeple. This building had been whitewashed at one time, but now the boards were faded and as gray and grimy as the rest of the fort. The captain left them in the yard with the guards and entered the building. As they waited, a crowd gathered, surrounding them, glaring, pointing, and murmuring among themselves. They kept their distance, their eyes full of hate and fear, until a woman pushed her way to the front. She wore about her neck dozens of small crosses made of twigs. Unlike the other women's, her hair was loose and hung down in her face. She pointed a long, bent finger at Peter.
"It be he,"
she cried in a frayed voice. She walked up to Peter and spat in his face. When this woman didn't spontaneously burst into flames, the crowd became bolder, and their taunts grew louder and more lively. Someone chucked a clump of dirt at Peter, hitting him in the face. Soon dirt flew at them from all quarters. A woman pushed past the guards and managed to rake her nails across Peter's cheek before they could knock her away. Nick felt hard fingers bite into his arm and found himself looking into the single angry eye of a hunched man.
"Demon," he spat. "You'll be demons."
A guard no sooner knocked the man away than a woman pushed in and grabbed Peter by the hair, yanking his head back and forth.
"You took me, John. You shall pay. By the Lord's own hand, you shall pay."
It took two guards to pull her off. The crowd surged forward and several scuffles broke out with the guards. The guards couldn't contain them, and Nick realized he was about to be beaten to death. A sharp voice, like the crack of a rifle, cut through the rumblings.
"Enough! All of you! Now!"
Heads turned, and the crowd wavered.
"Move aside," the voice commanded.
The crowd grumbled but fell back. Nick saw the tops of black hats pushing up. The crowd parted, and three men, followed by the captain, strode purposely forward and stood before them. Two of the men were dressed in capes and long coats. They wore tall, wide-brimmed felt hats, what Nick thought of as pilgrims' hats, and both wore black wooden crosses around their necks. The third towered at least a head above anyone, a giant, square-jawed, bald man. He wore an armored collar and steel armbands over a studded leather doublet. One of the caped men stepped forward and looked Peter up and down. One side of his face was dead, like that of a victim of a stroke, the dead eye milky and unblinking. That side of his mouth turned down into a perpetual frown. He carried a black staff capped with a simple gold cross.
"It is truly he," the man exclaimed and pointed the staff at Peter. "The son of Lucifer himself."
A low gasp escaped the crowd, and as one, they fell back. The crooked-faced man cocked his head to glare at Peter with his good eye.
God has brought you here to be punished, has set this task in my hands. I do not intend to let our Lord down.
The man then moved on to Danny, Leroy, and finally Nick. He spied the blue rabbit's foot around Nick's neck and snatched it away with a hard yank.
Satan's toys, he spat, and threw it to the dirt,
grinding it into the mud as though snuffing out a cigarette butt. He grasped Nick's jaw in his hard hands and held his face to his own.
Tell me, child, do you remember the name of your father?
Nick didn't trust himself to speak. He just nodded.
We'll see, the crooked-faced man said. Take them to the captain's quarters.
Captain Samuel Carver picked up the pitcher. He held it high and poured the cool water into his cup. He watched them, four filthy, miserable children sitting on the dirt floor of the cabin. They stared at the cup. Nothing makes a man thirstier than the stress of combat, and these boys hadn't had a drink since this morning, probably before. He brought the cup slowly to his lips and drank deeply, loudly, letting the water dribble down his chin and puddle onto the table. He finished the cup, smacked his lips, then poured another one. He pushed the pitcher across the table in their direction.
Would any of you lads care for a drink? He asked. Just pulled from the well. Cool and sweet. One thing you have to give this godforsaken island. The water's very sweet.